This is CICK News. Thanks for joining us. I'm your host, Dan Messick. Each week, we provide an update about events and issues developing right across Northwest BC. CICK Smithers Community Radio is on the dial at 93.9 FM, or you can listen online at smithersradio.com or subscribe to our podcast. CICK News broadcasts from unceded Ginamden Territory, home of the Wet'suwet'en Nation. Today on CICK News, we hear from Marlene Morris, co-director of the Community Development Institute at the University of Northern British Columbia. We'll dive into her new study, Ready or Not, Metro Migration to Smaller Communities in BC, a collaboration with the University of British Columbia's Housing Research Collaborative. According to her research, for decades, most intra-provincial migration has gone to smaller cities like Victoria, Kelowna, and Chilliwack. Citizens are searching for more affordable housing, more living space, and a higher quality of life. Although metropolitan Vancouver and Victoria remain the top choices for people migrating to BC from other provinces and territories, interprovincial migration to smaller towns has surged since 2015 and is on track to continue to do so into the future. Find out what shifts we're already beginning to see here in the northwest of BC and what comes next. Stay with us.
My name is Marlene Morris. I'm the co-director of the Community Development Institute at the University of Northern British Columbia.
Great. Marlene, thanks so much for speaking with us today. As I mentioned earlier, we obviously are seeing a number of issues with housing and, of course, migration, people moving into smaller communities from larger cities. So maybe you can give us a basic overview of the report that you issued earlier this year.
Certainly. The Community Development Institute has been looking at the topic of housing since our inception in 2004, but our most recent housing research program began in 2014. And most recently, we have started to look at a group of 39 communities in across non-metropolitan British Columbia, from all regions in non-metropolitan British Columbia, to look at some housing information and population data for those 39 communities. And we are learning a lot as we've been looking at these communities about patterns of migration, about patterns of population, and how our housing stock is equipped to meet the needs of our population as it's evolving. This particular project was a project that we did in collaboration with the University of British Columbia. And because we wanted to bring a sort of non-metropolitan and metropolitan lens to the housing situation, looking at it from the metro communities like the Lower Mainland, as well as the non-metropolitan communities in British Columbia.
I guess, Marlene, maybe you can chat a little bit about anything specific to the north. Obviously, you mentioned, you know, housing stock has been a big challenge. And we spoke with some of our realtors and the Northern Real Estate Board a little while ago, taking a look at, you know, what's driving kind of the housing boom or the issues with that here in northern communities. Because we've had this issue for a long time. You said your research started, you know, years ago in 2014. You know, how has that trend changed over that period of time?
Well, let me paint a picture for you of what housing stock is looking like in a lot of non-metropolitan British Columbia. So, first of all, one thing that you have that just leaps out at you from our research is that housing in non-metropolitan British Columbia is old. As a matter of fact, about 60% of it was built before 1980. And so so that means that the housing stock is, first of all, not energy efficient. The new building code standards for energy efficient housing came into being in 1980. So anything built before that is not particularly energy efficient. So it means that in winter, you're paying a lot to heat that home. It also makes sense that a house built before 1980 is in need of major repair, and that is very true. The older the housing stock in the community, the more that housing stock is in need of major repair. So we've got a lot of old housing stock that is not energy efficient and in need of major repair. The second thing about the housing stock that was built before 1980 is that it was built for families that existed in the 1960s, 70s. And most of our families in that era were mom, dad, and 2 to 4 children. So you can imagine that, you know, looking around our communities, you'll see a lot of very large houses sitting on very large lots. Now, fast forward to today and look at our households today, and you will find that our households are much smaller. As a matter of fact, our average household size is around 2 people today. That's because there's a lot more empty nesters, and there are a lot more young people who are delaying having a family and having much smaller families. So we've got a housing stock that was built for very large households, very large families. And today we have much, much smaller families. So there's also a mismatch between our population today and the housing that we have. So that just speaks to our need to really revitalize the housing stock that we have in our communities across our non-metropolitan communities. And we have 2 opportunities to do this. One, we could actually take the housing stock that we currently have and convert it to something that is more suitable. So, you know, you might have seen examples where great big older homes are, you know, almost completely gutted, for example, and, you know, they create two units for one. It was just one great big house before. So the conversion and renovation of existing housing is a really viable opportunity in northern British Columbia. The other one, of course, is to build new. So, you know, to look at building more housing that is more suited to the size and the population that we have now. And so that might be single family dwellings, it might be row housing, it might be some apartment condominiums. So it gives us a chance to look at new housing as well.
Yeah, I know, you know, for instance, the house I live in was built in the 50s, and our energy bills this winter were quite high. So I know that there's a number of buildings in town here that often get retrofitted so that they are more energy efficient. And I know that's going to continue. But, you know, we're also seeing higher construction costs and whatnot. So it seems like they just can't build houses fast enough to fill this void, especially with the other point of your report, which is the migration aspect. We've seen a number of people, families, usually young people, moving into town here. I know Terrace, Kitimat, even Prince Rupert has experienced a little bit of this over the last couple of years with the pandemic and people moving up from those larger urban centers like Vancouver and Victoria. I guess maybe break that down a little bit more for us. What are you actually seeing in terms of that migration from people who are living here in BC, moving from larger centers to rural communities?
Yes, so that has been a trend that has been sort of growing for a number of years now. And we started to see it in 2014 when we, you know, did our research when we were working with 2011 census data. And so we started to see the beginnings of that migration out of larger centers like the Lower Mainland into smaller centers. And it was growing. It was a trend that was accelerating. And then the pandemic hit. And I think that really motivated a lot of people to look very closely at, you know, what their housing options were. And I think, you know, when we've explored this, We're seeing that there are a number of reasons behind this. I mean, obviously, one of the key ones is the house price differential between the Lower Mainland and our non-metropolitan communities. I mean, for people who own a house in the Lower Mainland and selling that house and then taking, their equity and buying in a smaller community, that money goes a lot further in the housing market in a smaller community. And so they're able to buy, a larger home and possibly still end up with money in their bank account, left in their bank account. For families who have never owned a home, so they're a first-time buyer, a lot of them are facing a future where they will never own a home in the Lower Mainland because prices are just too high, or they have the opportunity to move to a smaller community where home ownership is possible for them, and so many of them are making the move to have the stability of home ownership. Because of that house price differential. There are people too who are looking for the quality of life aspects of what a smaller community has to offer. So, there are a lot of people, younger people, who report that they're interested in raising their family in a smaller community, where people really get to know their neighbors, where they feel that their children are safer, where there's a lot more opportunity to access, the natural environment much more quickly, where parents are not commuting for long distances and long periods of time every day to get to and from work. That sort of quality of life aspect for a new family is very attractive. And then there's people who are on the other end of the spectrum, which is they're retiring. And, we do have a lot of retirees now that the baby boom is just ending. The young end of the baby boom is now retiring. And they, too, are looking for a different quality of life, maybe away from the hustle and bustle of the city where they might be able to enjoy a slower pace of life and really to get to know their neighbors. And then all of that, of course, now with the pandemic, it has really come into focus because we've now all realized that we can work from home. So, before we all had the mindset that we had to go to an office every day, and that was our place of work. And so, if your office happened to be in the Lower Mainland, your choice was to leave your job, and if you were going to leave the Lower Mainland, well, now both employers and employees are realizing that people can literally live anywhere and still work anywhere, and so that has opened up all sorts of new opportunities and visions for the future in people's minds. And so that is probably if people were thinking about all of the first three factors, so cost, better place to raise a family, better place to retire before, that whole notion of now being able to work from home and do stuff from where you live has just added to the opportunity and possibilities for living in smaller communities. And our communities have very, very high quality of life. They've got great amenities. They've got a lot of qualities that a lot of people are looking for. So this is pushing this, pushing this whole idea forward.
Marlene, the last thing I want to ask is, and now that you've come this far, obviously this research has come quite a long way, and we're seeing some of these trends shift. What comes next in your research?
Well, our research is going to continue to look at the opportunities and some of the challenges facing our housing in our non-metropolitan communities. So, for example, we want to look now specifically at some of the subgroups and some challenges that that might emerge. So specifically looking at, let's say, seniors and what are some of the issues that they're facing around housing in non-metropolitan communities. What about people who are people with disabilities living in our smaller communities? What about, single parent families? What are their particular challenges? Indigenous First Nations populations living in our communities and the challenges that they might face moving between their home communities and various communities and non-First Nations communities across Northern BC. So we want to look at it by subgroup and just see what more we can learn about some of the particular housing challenges that certain populations face.
And I guess finally, Marlene, what do you hope that the outcome of this research will be on the ground? Obviously, there's some pretty tough challenges here. I know that, several governments in Canada, here in BC as well, have announced plans to build more housing to alleviate this challenge with the housing gap. Do you hope that some of this research will influence some of those decisions on the ground?
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, at the Community Development Institute, one of our goals is to do research and present our research findings in a way that is helpful and useful to a wide range of decision makers in government, local government, regional government, First Nations, provincial, federal government, but also to business sector, so chambers of commerce and business people in communities, to industry in communities, and to the development sector, as well as the nonprofit sector that also serves our communities and often the housing societies that sponsor housing. But our goal is to give people an idea of where they're at now and where some of their housing challenges now, and then also some options for addressing those challenges and developing solutions for the future. We try to make that link as easy as possible, to make those next steps as easy as possible. And so that people can and communities can see where the opportunities are to address some of those challenges, and that's really important to us. And then at the same time, when we are meeting with government representatives, various ministers in both the provincial and federal government, we highlight some of the needs because Our non-metropolitan housing challenges are every bit as important as those in the larger centers, but they don't get talked about enough. They don't get recognized often enough. And so part of what we also do is to try to raise awareness of some of the challenges we have and some of the solutions with our goal of hopefully impacting policy directions, policy decisions, program development, so that the housing in our regions is brought to the fore and we're addressing some of our housing challenges.
Okay, Marlene, we'll have to leave it there for now, but that sounds great, and we thank you for this research. It's quite enlightening to see, you know, what's been coming out, and obviously I know people here in our community and across the Northwest have been experiencing this and noticing this, and we're hoping to engage with them further on this issue. So as your research continues, we'll be sure to check back in, but for now, thank you so much for your time.
Well, thank you. And thanks for your interest, and thank you for having me.
That was Marlene Morris, co-director of the Community Development Institute at UNBC in Prince George. To read her full report, Ready or Not, Metro Migration to Smaller Communities, visit unbc.ca/Community Development Institute. You've been listening to CICK News. If you have any hot tips or news stories you think we should cover, contact us at CICKnews@smithersradio.com or follow us on Facebook at CICK News. CICK News is made possible by the Government of Canada and the Community Radio Fund of Canada, the only organization mandated to financially supporting campus and community radio stations across Canada. You can also catch our fresh shows each week at theskeena.com or subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you find your podcasts. Thanks to our producer, Pam Hassan, and all of our roving reporters, I'm Dan Messick. Thanks for listening.